Hello and welcome to EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. I'm your host, Prudence Robertson. Major pharmacies across the U.S. will be stocking shelves with the abortion pill, mifepristone. Medical analysis on the dangers this poses. One of the most influential countries in Europe enshrines abortion into its constitution. Is it only a matter of time until others follow suit? Plus, at President Biden's State of the Union, abortion is front and center, with the race for the White House well underway.
I do support IVF. My position is solid and will not change. I think this is a very dangerous bill for us to be adopting.
Alabama lawmakers passed legislation protecting in vitro fertilization providers from lawsuits and criminal prosecution for the damage or death of an embryo. Governor Kay Ivey signed legislation late Wednesday night. It comes in the wake of the Alabama Supreme Court ruling that grants embryonic children held in cryogenic freezers the same protections as children. Welcome to Pro-Life Weekly. I'm Prudence Robertson. Alabama's three major IVF providers paused services after the Supreme Court ruled. One doctor at an IVF provider watched the passage of the bill and said they will start in vitro services right away. Catholic Church teaching prohibits IVF and reproductive interventions for families, but does recognize the humanity of embryos inside and outside the womb.
And I would urge and challenge other pharmacies to do the same.
Vice President Kamala Harris praising the announcement that mifepristone, the first pill in the abortion drug regimen, which starves children to death in utero, will now be sold at CVS and Walgreens. The FDA announced that these massive drug chains could be certified to prescribe mifepristone a little more than a year ago, in January of 2023. CVS and Walgreens have announced a rollout of mifepristone in select locations over the next couple of weeks. About 20 or so independent pharmacies throughout the U.S. have already been certified and are selling mifepristone, according to GenBioPro, a business that distributes abortion drugs. And the National Abortion Federation, in partnership with Danco Laboratories and Planned Parenthood, have facilitated massive distribution of abortion pills in person and via mail, with a database that lists hundreds of providers across the U.S. Dr. Christina Francis is the CEO of the American Association of Pro-Life OBGYNs. She's a plaintiff in the case before the U.S. Supreme Court, in which the justices will consider whether or not mifepristone should remain on the market. She's joined now by Julie Blake, senior counsel in that case. Ladies, thank you for being here. Christina, let's start with you. Why is this happening now, despite it being permitted by the FDA over a year ago when it comes to these pharmacies?
Well, Prudence, thank you so much for having me on with you today. And, you know, it is certainly very disheartening news that large chains like CVS and Walgreens have now agreed to start dispensing these high-risk drugs. And, you know, I think it is a good question as to why they've decided to do this, because these are not drugs that treat any kind of disease process, at least for this indication of induced abortion. And, you know, really, the pharmacy is not the place to be dispensing these drugs. We've all been to our local CVS, our local Walgreens. We know what it's like when people are standing there waiting to pick up prescriptions. This is not a place where anyone can have any kind of privacy. Mm. And certainly pharmacists and pharmacies are not qualified to rule out contraindications or reasons why a woman should not receive these drugs, reasons that would make it more dangerous. They can't make sure she doesn't have an ectopic pregnancy or know how far along she is in her pregnancy. And so, you know, the FDA in its reckless actions when it removed essential safeguards governing the use of these drugs, and then again, as you said last year, when they said that local pharmacies could now essentially become abortion facilities, the FDA has set up this situation where women's lives are going to be actively endangered because of not having appropriate safeguards in place around the dispensation of these drugs.
Right, right. Those are really good points. And Christina, these pharmacy chains, they've really made a point to emphasize that they've gone through all the proper channels to become certified to sell mifepristone so that women will be safe. But Who heads up that certification process? What accountability exists there?
Well, you know, from my experience in looking at the process of how people become certified, it's actually not a difficult process to become certified, unfortunately, to prescribe these drugs. But what I think is important, again, for people to understand is that normally when a pharmacy or a pharmacist is dispensing a drug, they're relying on the fact that the person receiving that has an established relationship with a medical professional who is going to be monitoring the use of that drug, who's going to be monitoring for any potential complications.
Yeah.
And we know that that does not exist in this circumstance. You know, whether a woman has gotten online and ordered these drugs and then it's being dispensed through a pharmacy, or whether an abortion provider has given a prescription for this drug and then she's picking it up, we know that the typical circumstance for women obtaining these drugs is that they are not being obtained from a medical professional that she has an established relationship with. And so my question to these pharmacies would be, who's going to be monitoring these women for life-threatening complications?
Right.
Who's going to be managing those life-threatening complications? We know because of the FDA's actions that it's going to be physicians like me seeing these women in emergency rooms when they're experiencing potentially life-threatening complications.
Right. And let's talk a little bit more about those life-threatening complications. What have you seen women experience in terms of physical symptoms of taking these abortion pills alone at home, maybe in their bathroom, their dorm room?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's very definite physical risks like hemorrhage or very heavy bleeding, retained tissue where she doesn't pass all of the pregnancy and has retained tissue and maybe needs an emergency surgery to complete that. And infection and sepsis are very significant risks. But there are also risks beyond that, that again, the FDA has set up a situation where women are even more vulnerable to these risks, such as not screening for coercion or seeing, is there someone who's forcing this woman to have this abortion, or screening for trafficking? And as we said before, screening for and ruling out a life-threatening condition like ectopic pregnancy, that is the leading cause of maternal mortality in the first trimester. So these are all things that women deserve to be seen in person, to be evaluated for. Yeah. And that's, of course, not being done because of what the FDA has done. And as you said, that's why we are asking the Supreme Court at the end of this month to put those original safeguards back in place. So at the very least, women can have an in-person evaluation before obtaining these high-risk drugs.
Right, right. And we know that doctors such as yourself have published studies emphasizing all of these risks that are involved in taking abortion pills, but some of those studies have now been retracted from medical journals. Julie, I want to turn to you. How is this going to impact the case before the Supreme Court? We know that these studies were a major part of the reason this case came into existence.
Well, we're confident that whenever the Supreme Court looks at the science, they don't have to go any farther than the FDA's own label, which says that roughly 1 in 25 women who take these abortion drugs will end up in the emergency room.
Yeah. Well, ladies, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate your time. We'll continue to track this important case. In France, cheers erupted after lawmakers approved an amendment explicitly enshrining abortion into the country's constitution on Monday. It is the first country in the world to do so. Many watched the announcement on giant screens in the heart of Paris. Abortion is widely supported across France, and support even crosses party lines. The abortion amendment passed in a 780-72 vote in the Palace of Versailles and brought cheering lawmakers to their feet. There was a pro-life presence outside when this took place, with pictures of Our Blessed Mother and signs reading, "France is praying." France permits fully funded abortions for women and minors up to 14 weeks gestation, with some exceptions for abortion later in pregnancy. It has been legal there since 1975. The amendment to France's constitution is a fulfillment of President Emmanuel Macron's promise to advance abortion in the wake of the U.S. Supreme Court's reversal of Roe versus Wade. The Pontifical Academy for Life issued a statement upholding French bishops' opposition to the abortion amendment, writing, "In the age of universal human rights, there can be no right to take a human life." So what does this mean, not just for France, But for the rest of Europe, Solène Tadié, the Europe correspondent for our sister news entity, the National Catholic Register, joins us now to help us understand the repercussions of this measure. Solène, thanks for being here. I know you grew up in Paris. We saw that the city went so far as to light up the Eiffel Tower in celebration of this abortion decision. How do you make sense of really their jubilation, and what reaction are you hearing from those you know in France?
Yes, Prudence, the tourists walking around the Trocadéro in Paris, this famous place, on Monday must have been very surprised to see these scenes of jubilation, these purple smoke bombs flying everywhere with Beyoncé's songs and glittering Eiffel Tower with the message, "My body, my choice." Some people told me maybe we thought it was some kind of anticipation of the Olympic Games or something like that. What is going on? But in reality, the crowd was celebrating the fact that the Constitution now protects the act of taking a life of an unborn child. So this ostentation, this pomp that was seen both in Paris and in Versailles, where the vote took place, we could see standing ovations, tears, people singing, like politicians. That created a sense of malaise and even indignation among a number of observers, people to which I spoke, and even people who are pro-abortion usually, specifically because, I mean, they thought it was somehow indecent, given the seriousness of the issue, and France's critical situation socially, economically, demographically, it all looked like a circus.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And Solène, tell me about how Catholic bishops are reacting.
Well, the French bishops this time reacted quite strongly. You know, some commentators say that the French bishops are not outspoken enough, but this time many of them spoke out individually to condemn these attacks on life and often describing the harsh reality of the practice of abortion without ambiguity. They called for fasting and prayer for France. The former Archbishop of Paris, Michel Aupetit, who is still very popular on social media, even described France as a totalitarian state on the day of the vote. So you could definitely tell that these bishops, these French bishops, are becoming more and more outspoken. During the vote, you also had several young priests in different cities of France who sounded the knell from their churches. So it looks like the radicalization of the pro-abortion movement is also strengthening its opponents.
Well, that's encouraging to hear. And France is a leader in the European Union. It's a top funder with a large delegation. It's definitely a significant player in Europe more broadly. So I'm curious, how might this vote influence other member countries of the European Union?
Clearly, there will be consequences. After this French initiative, it's very difficult to calculate the consequences right now. Especially when one thinks that until now only dictator Tito's socialist Yugoslavia had dared to enshrine abortion in its constitution. But now France has overturned this taboo topic. It opened the Pandora's box. So it paved the way for other countries to follow, becoming the perfect model to follow in the footsteps. Especially, you know, we know that France still has a very strong cultural influence in the West, especially on its European neighbors. And one should just see the chorus of praise for Emmanuel Macron in the European press, including a tweet from the president of the World Health Organization, who praised the initiative. So clearly pro-abortion's movements are on the roll in Europe. Spain has taken new steps to enlarge the legislation for abortion. It's the case also for Poland, that used to be the more restrictive with regard to abortion in Europe. So things are changing very quickly. And yes, now they have a very model on which to base their model. We have the left-wing proponent of the first law to enshrine abortion in the French Constitution. And on the very day of the vote, she announced her intention to file a resolution at the European Parliament to have, again, abortion enshrined in the EU's Charter of Fundamental Rights. So this is why pro-life groups in neighboring countries, especially in Italy, you have a lot of pro-life groups who are already organizing themselves, already preparing to fight to prevent this French, this new French model from being exported into their countries.
Right, right. And Solène, let's talk a little bit more about that domino effect that we could see here. The United Kingdom is considering a law that would decriminalize abortion after a woman was put in jail for aborting her baby after the 24-week limit that exists there last year. What does the role of criminalizing abortion play in these debates?
What could be said, Prudence, is that behind these legal issues that are very important, there are other stakes that are of totally ideological nature. There is the idea that taking a life at any stage of pregnancy is harmless and that is never a crime. Okay. So by denying the unborn child its legal identity, we also deprive that baby of its human nature,
right,
reinforcing also the idea that it's nothing more than a mass of cells. And that's what pro-abortion movements are trying to say. So the plan of these movements around the world are to eliminate all legal time limits to have an abortion so that they can be carried out without consequences up to 9 months of pregnancy. So these are philosophical, political, bioethical challenges of the utmost importance. It's very important for the church leaders and for Catholic intellectuals to be on the ground and interact in these very important debates. Mm.
Solène, thank you for joining us. Really appreciate your expertise.
Thank you very much.
We are going to make our country greater than ever before.
But the time has now come to suspend my campaign.
Nikki Haley officially ends her presidential campaign as Joe Biden and Donald Trump prepare to go head-to-head once again. The difference between 2020 and 2024, well, political pundits say, it's President Biden's approval rating. A New York Times poll predicts the largest national lead yet for Donald Trump since he first ran for president in 2015. Our second Catholic president, Joe Biden, trails Trump in the polls, released just yesterday, by 5 percentage points. While Trump has reminded voters on the campaign trail of his Supreme Court nominations that helped put an end to Roe versus Wade, President Biden has doubled down on his position to advance abortion and promised to reinstate Roe as the law of the land. California Governor Gavin Newsom sets the tone for pro-abortion politicians with a staggering six-figure ad buy targeting minors. The ad features a young girl chained to a hospital bed who is presumably the victim of a sexual crime and is being denied an abortion. The ad targets proposals and laws in several states meant to protect minors from trafficking and deter abortion across state lines. The laws would prohibit out-of-state travel for minors to have an abortion without parental consent. Newsom is encouraging women who cannot end the lives of their children in their own state to travel his way. He says, quote, "Our state has secured a stockpile of an alternative drug to ensure that Californians continue to have access to safe reproductive health treatments. We will not cave to extremists who are trying to outlaw these critical abortion services." That alternative drug is called misoprostol. It's the second pill used in the chemical abortion process, which induces labor. Newsom is suggesting that women take these labor-inducing pills without the first half of the procedure being done, which could result in dangerous failed abortions. In President Biden's State of the Union, his pro-abortion stance was front and center. This year, he and the First Lady welcomed Kate Cox into the halls of Congress for the address. Cox wanted an abortion in her home state of Texas after doctors diagnosed her baby with trisomy 18, a rare chromosomal disease that affects brain and body development. Her doctors claimed they were unsure whether this abortion would be legal because state law prohibits nearly all abortions. Cox sued the state of Texas and demanded an abortion at 20 weeks gestation. She lost the suit and traveled to New Mexico for the life-ending procedure. She and her husband named the baby girl they lost Chloe. Ms. Cox said in an interview, quote, "I gave her a name because she'll always be my baby. Her middle name is my grandfather's name, so she'll know who to look for in heaven." Dr. Monique Ruberu, a pro-life OBGYN and advocate, is here now to weigh in. Dr. Ruberu, thanks for being here. It's clear that Kate Cox is grieving the loss of her child. I know you can't speak to the exact specifics of her case, as she isn't your patient, but How do you advise women who receive diagnoses like trisomy 18?
So the issue is every single life is precious, and nobody on this planet is perfect by any means. So when I encounter a woman who has any prenatal diagnosis that would be different from a completely normal pregnancy according to what we consider to be normal medically, I would always let them understand that their baby's life is precious. And although their baby's life may look a little bit different, their baby's appearance may look a little bit different, their baby may have different challenges in life,
right,
it doesn't make the worth of that life any different. We're all worth equally. We're all worth so much in God's eyes, and we should be worth that much in each other's eyes. Every life is worth protecting, and we all have different problems. Some people might have diabetes. Some people might have severe allergies. Some people might have Down syndrome. Some people might have trisomy 18. Some people might have lung issues or intestinal issues or gut malrotation, but it doesn't make that life worth any less and worth fighting for.
And we know that ultimately Texas law enforcement didn't allow Ms. Cox to have this abortion in her home state. But if she had decided not to travel out of state for the abortion, what could the rest of her pregnancy have looked like?
You know, it varies pregnancy to pregnancy. So babies that have trisomy 18 can have a lot of different issues depending on how severe that trisomy 18 is.
Yeah.
The baby could have had polyhydramnios, which means a buildup of fluid around the baby if the kidneys weren't functioning well. The baby could have just had issues with, you know, the abnormalities with the bones, abnormalities with brain formation. But it could have been a preterm delivery. But at the same time, at the gestation of 20 plus weeks, it could have been a baby that was still moving in the uterus. It could have been a baby that was still kicking in the uterus. Mm-hmm. A heartbeat was present. We know that. So all of these things, you know, there are definitely malformations that occur with trisomy 18 as a part of that illness. But the baby was growing. The baby was moving.
Right, right. And it seems like it probably would have been a hard road either way, but it's important to know what that other alternative could have been. And I'm curious, Dr. Ribeiro, could you speak to the efficacy of these diagnoses of disabilities or conditions in utero? How often do we know that these diagnoses are correct?
You know, it's interesting. It really depends on the testing that is used, right? So the initial testing that is done is blood testing. And, you know, previously it used to be just a quad test that was done. Now, more often, it's the NIPT blood test, which is much more specific, much more sensitive in picking up abnormalities. So even with that, though, there is still a percentage of abnormalities that they detect, which are not true abnormalities, and it's just a mistake. And so there is always a possibility when you do a test like this that there may be a false test. However, you know, from that test, typically they would go on to further testing. They would do more invasive testing, where they actually test the amniotic fluid or they test a part of the placental tissue in order to identify and understand exactly what the genetics are for this particular baby. And that is much more specific than it would be to just do the blood work. There are also ultrasound findings that you would see with certain genetic abnormalities.
Before I let you go, Dr. Ribeiro, as a pro-life doctor, from your perspective, what do you think of President Biden and the First Lady inviting someone like Ms. Cox to the State of the Union? What do you make of that?
I think they're obviously trying to show their support for abortion and abortion in all cases, and that they're trying to use this single case of a woman who has chosen abortion because of a medical malformation in her child and trying to promote abortion. And we know that the majority of cases of abortion have nothing to do with a medical malformation. The majority of cases are chosen out of fear and out of concern that there would be a lack in that person's life, in that mother's life. Mm-hmm. And so they're trying to normalize abortion, and I don't think that it's a good thing.
Thank you, Dr. Ribeiro. I appreciate your clarity on this. Thanks for joining us. Coming up, child support for the unborn, the state that is advancing legislation to cover pregnancy expenses. Plus, the nation's largest city works to provide more resources for families. We explain after the break. Expanding child support to cover the unborn. Kentucky state senators passed a bill this week that would grant the right to collect child support for unborn children. That money can be used to cover expenses such as medical bills. The measure allows a parent to seek support up to 1 year after giving birth to retroactively cover pregnancy expenses. This bill that gives unborn children similar rights as a person outside of the womb now advances to the House. Republicans have supermajorities in both chambers. And New York City is expanding its paid parental and family leave for non-union city workers. The move impacts more than 10,000 municipal employees. The city is doubling paid parental leave from 6 to 12 weeks. Non-union city workers can also now enroll in New York State paid family leave to be eligible for up to 12 weeks of job-protected paid time off to care for seriously ill family members. It's important to note that New York City has some of the most lax abortion laws in the country and was the first city in the world to provide free abortion pills. We continue to follow marches for life across the U.S. In Arizona, pro-lifers showed their support late last week. There's a law on the books in Arizona that bans nearly all abortions, but is currently being blocked by litigation. Right now, the state abortion limit stands at 15 weeks. That does it for this edition of EWTN Pro-Life Weekly. I'm Prudence Robertson. Don't forget, you can find us at EWTN Pro-Life on all social media platforms, X, Facebook, Instagram, we're there. And sign up for our newsletter, The Pro-Life Pulse, at EWTN.com/pro-life. Before we go, we want to remind you about a massive Catholic event, the National Eucharistic Congress, this July. You can get discounted tickets through EWTN. Log on to EWTN.com/Eucharist to sign up. Remember, life is a gift. Your life is a gift. God bless.